This side contains exercises that ask you to close your eyes and use visualization techniques. You may want to wait to listen to this side until you're not driving, so you can relax completely and get full benefit from this tape.
There was a touching and powerful article in the Baltimore Sun newspaper that was published not long ago. It was about a young boy named Calvin Stanley. It seems Calvin rides a bike, plays baseball, goes to school, and does just about everything else that 11-year-olds do, except see. How could this little boy do all these things while many people in the same situation just give up on life or live in sorrow? As I read the article, it became clear that Calvin's mother is a master reframer. She has turned every experience that Calvin has, experiences that others would have classified as limitations, into advantages in Calvin's mind. Since that's what he represents to himself, that's what Calvin experiences. Here's some examples out of the article of how his mother communicates to him. Quote, Calvin's mother remembers the day her son asked why he was blind. I explained he was born that way and that it was nobody's fault. He asked, why me? I said, I don't know why, Calvin. Maybe there's a special plan for you. Then she sat her son down and told him, you are seeing, Calvin. You're just using your hands instead of your eyes. And remember, there's nothing you can't do. One day, Calvin was very sad because he realized he'd never see his mother's face. But Mrs. Stanley knew what to tell her child. The article continued. I said, Calvin, you can see my face. You can see it with your hands and by listening to my voice. And you can tell more about me that way than somebody who can use his eyes, unquote. The article went on to say that Calvin moves in the sighted world with the trust and faith and the unshakable confidence of a child whose mother has always been there. Calvin wants to become a computer programmer and someday design programs for the blind. You know, the world is full of Calvins. We need more people who use reframing as effectively as Mrs. Stanley did. I had the good fortune of recently meeting another master reframer. His name is Commander Jerry Coffey. He's an incredible man who used reframing to keep his sanity while he spent 7 years in solitary confinement in a POW camp in Vietnam. Our first reaction to hearing this is probably to wince a bit. However, nothing is good or bad except what thinking makes it so, as Shakespeare pointed out. And Jerry decided to represent to himself that this was a great opportunity to learn more about himself than ever before, a chance to become closer to God, something that someday would make him proud of the way he handled himself. With that frame of reference, he saw everything that happened as part of a personal development experience, and he came out totally and positively transformed 7 years later. He wouldn't give up the experience for $1 million, he says. Think of a major mistake that you've made in the last year. You might feel an instant rush of gloom, but chances are the mistake was part of an experience with more success than failures. And as you consider it, you'll probably begin to realize that you learned more from that mistake than from anything else you did that month. So you can zero in on what you did wrong, or you can reframe the experience in a way that focuses beyond it to what you've learned. There are multiple meanings to any experience. The meaning in life is whatever you choose to emphasize, just as its content is what you choose to focus on. One of the keys to success, then, is finding the most useful frame for any experience so you can turn into something that works for you rather than against you. The one thing I cannot stress enough is that you're in control. You run your brain. You produce the results of your life. Reframing is one of the most powerful ways you can change the way you think about an experience. You already put frames on experience, so now it's time to do it consciously to make sure they empower you rather than limit you. Take a moment and reframe these situations. Someone comes to you and says, my boss yells at me all the time. How would you reframe that response? What could you say? Well, you might say, it's great that he cares enough about you to tell you how he really feels. He could have just fired you. That changes the response, doesn't it? I had to pay $4,000 more in income tax this year. A reframe to that might be, that's great. You must have made a lot more money this year than last year. Somebody says, we have little or no extra money to buy Christmas presents this year. Great, then you can become much more ingenious and make something people will never forget instead of buying that run-of-the-mill gifts that you used to get. Someone says, every time I begin to succeed in a big way, I sabotage my success. It's great that you're now aware of that pattern, so with that awareness, you can now change things. Reframing is happening all the time. It's part of advertising. Isn't that what Coca-Cola and Pepsi are constantly fighting over? Who can control the frame? The Pepsi challenge versus Coke is it? Ronald Reagan is probably one of the greatest reframers of all time. One of the best examples of his reframing ability came in a second presidential debate against Walter Mondale. In the first debate, Reagan's age had become an issue for the first time in the campaign. Of course, that was a reframe, too. People already knew how old he was. But his stumbling performance and the press coverage of it reframed his age from a simple fact to a potential liability. In the second debate, Mondale made comments that again implied Reagan's age was a liability. People waited for Reagan's rebuttal. In his best aw shucks tone, he said, nah, he didn't think age should be an issue in the campaign. He said he had no intention of making an issue of his opponent's youth and inexperience. In one sentence, he completely reframed the question in a way that guaranteed it no longer be a major factor in the race. Remember, every human emotion has its place. It can be reframed. So use reframes so that you continually perceive the world in a way that empowers you. Now, how else can we change how we feel? How else can we run our brains? Well, we've talked about changing what we picture in our minds, what we say to ourselves, but also we can change how we picture things and how we say things to ourselves. In other words, as we've already stated, how we picture things in our mind makes a difference. Let me give you an experience so you can feel the difference in your body. Close your eyes for a moment, and what I'd like you to do is, again, think of something else. Think of something that's been bothering you, making you frustrated or feel limited or upset. And what I want you to do is, as you see this in your mind, is just answer a few questions for me. And just answer them in your own thought processes. Notice, is this thing that's bothering you, if you make it into a picture, is it a movie, like a motion picture, or is it a still frame? Is it in color, or is it in black and white? Is it focused, or is it defocused? Does it have a frame around the picture, or does it seem to go on forever like a panorama? Is it bright, or is it dim or dark? Is it close to you, or is it far away? Is it life-size or bigger than life? Are you in the picture right there, associated and experiencing it, or are you seeing yourself in the picture over there? Do you hear certain sounds when you think of the situation that bothers you? Do you hear a certain tone of voice that affects you especially negatively? Are you saying anything to yourself and your own thoughts as you remember the situation? What kind of sensations do you feel in your body? Do you have heavy feelings or light feelings? Warm feelings or cold feelings? Tense muscles or relaxed muscles? Where do you feel muscle tension if you feel it? Upper part of your body, an arm, a leg, where specifically? And then what I'm going to ask you to do is to make some changes in how, not what, but how you're representing this experience in your mind. And I want you to note what it does to your emotion or your state. What I'd like you to do is take this picture that you're imagining in your mind, this thing that bothers you, and bring it closer to you. Now notice, does that make the negative feeling more intense? For many people, it does. Make it bigger. Make it brighter. And again, notice what that does to your emotional state. For most people, when you make things bigger and brighter and bring them closer, it intensifies them and makes them more negative. Now, step into the experience so you feel it. Make the sound sound even more shrill. Change it so it becomes more intense. Feel more tension in your body. Feel more heaviness. Feel the sensations growing around your body. Now, does it feel much more negative than it did before? Great, so now you know how to depress yourself. You say, well, thanks a lot. I just want to show you what you already do in order to get depressed. These are things you do unconsciously. Now you're aware of them consciously. Since you're aware of them, we can also change them. So let's change it. Take this picture of this thing that's bothered you and push it far away out in front of you. Push it further away so it's way out there. And then notice, have your feelings not dropped in their negative intensity? Have they not become much more neutral than they were a few moments ago? By changing the proximity of your representations, you immediately change how you feel as well. It lessens the intensity as it gets further away. Now, take that picture and make it black and white and make it a still frame. And as you do this, notice again if the state changes and becomes more neutral or less intense than it was before. Next, take this picture and shrink it way down and make it defocused. So now you have this little dinky defocused little thing way out there. And notice your feelings are quite different than they were before, aren't they? Now, take that picture that's way out there and change the sounds. So now you hear the sounds coming out in a different way. Now the sounds have more of a rhythm to them. Make the feelings out there, way over there, feel really light and gentle and relaxed. And then take that picture and push it into the sun. Just imagine it going in the sun and watch what happens as soon as it hits the sun. And notice how you feel now. Think about the situation now. And I think what you'll find is you either have neutral feelings, maybe even some positive feelings, but at least neutral feelings about this thing that was bothering you. And then open your eyes. Now, what have we done? All we've done is changed how you've been representing these things to yourself. Not the what. You were seeing the same things. We didn't change the content, just how you were doing it. We call this changing submodalities. Now, submodality sounds like a complicated word, but it's actually very simple. You have five senses that you experience the world through. You see, you hear, you taste, you touch, and you smell. Those five senses are also known as your five modalities, or five modes of experiencing the world. So a submodality is a subset or a more specific description of how you see things, or how you hear things, or how you feel things, etc. If the major set in an example like this was cars, then a subset might be Mercedes. If the major set in human experience is visual, then a subset might be brightness or size or shape. So what's the impact when we change submodalities? Well, the impact is quite profound, as I'm sure you experienced. Why? Well, think about it. Haven't you had people say to you before, oh, you're blowing things out of proportion? They're describing probably exactly what's going on in your brain. Because when you make things larger, it intensifies your feeling about them. If they're negative, it intensifies the negative feeling. If it's a great picture, it intensifies the feelings that are positive about that picture. Have you ever had a situation where a job seemed to be so big that you didn't even know where to start? Most of us have. You want to know how to change it? Just stop for a moment, close your eyes, and imagine the project. And then shrink it way down to size where you can imagine the whole project, you doing it, and seeing that picture of that happening in your right hand. All of a sudden, you'll find that by making it smaller, it seems much less intimidating. All of a sudden, you feel differently. And because you feel differently, you'll be in a better state. And when you're in a better state, you'll get access to the part of you that does know how to handle the situation. You won't be overwhelmed. You'll be able to handle it. Now, I know this sounds like a simplification, but it's exactly what happens in your brain. If you've ever had a project and somehow turned yourself around to go do it, the way you did it unconsciously probably was by shrinking it in your unconscious mind. Now you have the ability to do it right away and not have to wait till somehow you manage to change things. You can change them right now and you can do it directly. Have you ever heard somebody say, I just need to get some distance from my problems? Well, guess what? You don't have to go far away. Just take your problems and push them far away. Push them way out there and notice immediately you have a different emotional state. You want to know why some people are unhappy all the time? It's real simple. They take all the positive experiences of their life and they store them far away or oftentimes behind them. Let's try something else. What I'd like you to do is close your eyes and I want you to think of something that's happened in the last few days or the last week. Anything at all that you have some feelings about. Just think of anything at all that you want. Some experience that's happened in the last week or so. And what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to take that experience and first of all, notice where it's located. Is it in front of you? Is it above you? Is it below you? To the right? To the left? Where is it located? Is it behind you? And what I want you to do is I want you to notice how recent it feels like that happened. And it should feel fairly recent, I would imagine. Now take this experience, this picture, these sounds, these feelings, and I want you to just imagine putting them behind your back and then pushing them behind you. Further and further and further until the picture goes like 2 or 3 miles behind you where you can't see it, where it's dark and small and it's a little tiny thing way, way, way behind you. Now, as it's way back there, think about it being way back there and think about how recent does it feel now? Does it feel like it happened last week or quite a long time ago? Let's try something else. Bring that experience back where it was. Bring it from way back there and put it back where it was. If it was a positive experience, if it's a negative experience, you might want to put it behind you. Haven't you heard people say things like, oh, God, he's so great, he just puts all the problems behind him. People who succeed do put their problems behind them, literally. And they bring the things they're excited about them and they keep them in front of them. So in their mind, they're stored mentally in front of them, constantly enticing them to go for more, to become more, to do more. Now let's try something else. Think of a pleasant memory that you had from your childhood, any memory at all. And what I'd like you to do is notice as you think about it way back then, how recent does it feel like it happened? Next, take that image or that experience and bring it forward till it's very, very close and it's very big and very bright. Make it big, bright, and close right in front of you. Bring it even closer. Now, how recent does it feel? If you just judge by your emotions and not your intellect, does it not feel like it happened much more recently? Would you like to know how some people remain unhappy most of their life while other people remain very happy? It's very simple. People who are unhappy often take the most positive experiences of their life and they put them behind them and push them back and make them small and dark. people who are very happy tend to take their happy experiences and keep them right in front of them and put the negative experiences behind them. People who are unhappy have a strategy for doing so. They take the great happy experiences of their life and they make them small so they don't feel very positive, they don't feel very happy. They often put these positive experiences behind themselves and store them far back away so they don't feel very recent. Oftentimes when you talk to an unhappy person, you say, well, God, you've had all these great things happen to you in the last couple weeks. And they go, no, I just don't feel that way. They don't feel that way because of the way they represent their positive experiences. They represent them in a way that's impotent. What people who are unhappy do with their negative experiences is they often enlarge them, make them bright, make them focused, make them clear. They often associate to them. They often store them right in front of themselves. So they're constantly near, making them feel bad, while the positive experiences are far away. I know a man named W. Mitchell who lives in Denver, Colorado. He's a very, very special man.
About 12 years ago, had an interesting experience. He was riding a motorcycle 65 miles an hour down the highway in San Francisco. Something caught his attention on the side of the road. He glanced over to see what it was while he was driving, turned back what seemed like a split second later, but it actually passes about 5 or 10 seconds. When he looked up, a Mack truck had stopped right in front of him. He was heading into the back of it 65 miles an hour. In an effort to save his life, he threw his motorcycle down at the last second and skidded on the ground underneath this truck at 65 miles an hour. Now that's bad enough, only something worse happened. The gas cap on his motorcycle popped off. Fuel spilled out all over the place. The friction ignited it. Boom! Instantly, fire. 3/4 of his body burned off. His entire face melted. His fingers burned off. He wakes up in a hospital bed in searing pain. Unbelievable pain. I mean, he's fearing to breathe, fearing to move. He comes back from this experience because he has mastered his what with himself? Mastered his communication with himself. Somehow he gets himself through this experience and literally goes back to work in the business community. He starts a business and becomes a millionaire within 2 years. Millionaire from nothing, from scratch. He got $100,000 in the accident, used it to start a business. Guess what the business was? A wood-burning stove company. Yes, it's a fact. He decided that was his way of conquering his fear and became one of the most successful wood-burning stove companies in the entire United States, sold out of Vermont. Now, 3 years later, he has another experience. He has an airplane accident and becomes paralyzed from the waist down for life. Now, according to his wife, he's fried and crippled. And of course, she doesn't want to be around a fried cripple, so she leaves him. Right? You thought you had problems. Now, here's this man who now, after weeks and weeks of working at this and developing his body, comes back, but now he has to face his life. He's grotesquely burned. People don't even want to look at him. It's hard to even look at him. He's so grotesque looking. They cut off his toes and they sew them on his hands so he has something to manipulate with, right? And here's this man is now beginning his life again, right? I mean, his life makes most of our worst tragedies look like a comedy, doesn't it? And guess what? He's totally joyous. Because you know what? He understands that it's not what happens, it's what you do. He said, okay, this is what's happened. I can keep worrying and feeling bad about what happened, or I can decide what I'm going to do with my life. And he decided he was going to do something that was going to make a difference. And he decided that there were a lot of issues in the community of Colorado that he thought were important that were not being addressed. So he decided to become a politician. He ran for Congress 2 years ago and came very close to winning. He won the internal game, he didn't quite win the external game. He is now this year running for lieutenant governor of Colorado, and he seems to be the favored candidate for the Democratic Party. Not bad. Arguing the issues intensely. Great communicator. In fact, one of his logos, one of the things that he has on all of his buttons is said, it says, send me to the governor's mansion, and he said, I won't just be another pretty face. See, he's mastered his communication himself. He knows it's not what happens, it's what you do. Julio Iglesias. How many of you have heard of him? No kidding. You know why you've heard of him? Because his music is played every 30 seconds somewhere in the world. Not bad. One of the greatest selling artists in the history of the world. Did that happen because this man had such great ability, such great talent? He grew up young with his tremendous singing voice, right? And that, you know, suave look, right, that knocks women over and all that kind of stuff. Is that what happened? No way. At the age of 20, he wanted to be either a soccer player or an attorney. And he had a car accident where they thought for sure he'd die. Not only did he survive, but then they told him he'd never walk again. He didn't believe that either, fortunately, and he kept working at it. He lived for 1 year in the hospital. While he was there, a nurse gave him a guitar, and he began to try singing and playing with his voice and working on himself. That's how his career got started. In high school, they wouldn't even let him in the choir. He didn't even want to be there except his girlfriend was in that class, and he figured he'd get next to her and be with her more. He had no interest in singing. All of a sudden, boom, transformed the greatest singer, one of the greatest singers in the history of the world. All because he realized it's what? It's what you what? It's what you do that makes a difference.
We can direct our own states now by changing the way we represent things. And we can take positive things and make them even better. We don't just have to change problems. That's easy. Let's do some good things. Close your eyes. Let's try another exercise. Think of something that creates for you feelings of ecstasy, feelings of joy, something that creates powerful, positive feelings, and make a picture of that in your mind. And by the way, if you think you have difficulty making pictures, just feel the feelings you have when you feel joy and ecstasy. Hear what you say to yourself. And then gradually, you may begin to have pictures appear as well. Just imagine and notice this feeling that creates feelings of ecstasy. Is it a movie or is it a still frame? Is it life size or smaller? Is it in color or black and white? Is it focused or defocused? Is it bright, dim, or dark? Is there a frame around it or is it a panorama that goes on forever? Are you in the picture experiencing it? Or are you watching it from over there? Is it close to you or far away? What sounds do you hear? Is your own voice involved? What's the tone of the voices you hear that creates these positive feelings of joy and ecstasy? What are the sensations in your body? Do you feel light or heavy? Do you feel tension or relaxation? And if you do feel tension, where do you feel the tension? See, just by changing your submodality of tension, you can immediately change your state. Notice all the sensations. And now let's try something. Let's make this even better. Take this experience and bring it closer. For most people in the culture, and everyone's a little bit different, this intensifies the positive feeling. Bring it even closer. Try this one. Make it bigger. Even bigger. And notice what the impact of making it bigger is. Try this one. Make it brighter. Turn the brightness knob up. Make it much brighter. Notice how it feels. Brighter and brighter. Make sure you're in the experience. Make sure it's in color and there's movement. Make the sounds even more positive. Enhance them in every way you can. Enhance the sensations in your body as well. And as you do this, notice you do feel even better now than when you first thought about it. You can take any experience in your life and add juice to it, add joy to it by enhancing the way you represent it. So you don't have to just change problems. You can take things that make you feel good and make them turn into ecstasy. You have the ability to run your own brain. You can do things directly to change how you feel. And you don't have to rely on drugs or food or alcohol. If you want to, that's your business. But this is a more direct and precise way, and there are no side effects. Let's try another exercise. How do you feel when somebody says you got a bright future? Feels pretty good, doesn't it? Just try something. Imagine your future right now. Just get a picture in your mind about your future. Something that represents to you what your future might be like. And notice how you feel about it. And then just try one thing. Turn the brightness up. Make it brighter and brighter and brighter. Come on, try it again. Brighter. And notice how you feel about your future. Is it more attractive? Does it draw you more? Now, let's try the opposite. Look at that same picture and make it dark and black and whitish. Make it darker and darker and black and white. For most people, their future doesn't feel as attractive now. So turn it back up again. Put the brightness back up. Put the brightness in your future. And notice, you do feel like you have a bright future now, don't you? You quite literally can control how you feel. And by the way, if you feel like your future is bright, you're willing to do things today to make it even better. When people feel like it's not so bright, they feel like, why even try? Now, it's important to note that of all the questions that I've asked you about submodalities, most people have a couple that affect them most, because we're all different. For some people, making things darker will intensify it, rather than making it brighter. So just pay attention to the effect. Also, for some people, bringing something closer doesn't make a big difference, but if you make it brighter, it makes a huge difference. For some people, it's not what they see that makes a difference, but how they change the quality of the tone of voice. For example, do you have one of those internal dialogues that sometimes says to you, you can't do this? Do you ever have one of those things that stops you right before you go for it? Well, let me show you a way to handle it. Rather than trying to shut the voice down, just change the volume of the voice. So now instead of it saying, you can't do this, it now says, you can't do this. It changes how you feel instantly, doesn't it? And out of that kind of voice tone, you might laugh or change the approach. You might change that same voice so it's just as loud, but it has a sexual tone of voice. So now it says, you can't do that. For a lot of people, when they hear that tone of voice, they feel like really doing it. It's all up to you to make the changes and to find out what impacts you most. But once you discover it, you can find anything that upsets you. And if you discover, for example, that changing brightness is the biggest difference for you, you can just brighten it up. Instantly, you'll feel differently. Instantly, you'll behave differently. This is the power of mind mastery. This is the power of knowing how to run your brain. This is the beginning of your owner's manual for directing that brain to produce the results that you want right now. This is going beyond positive thinking to precise direction of your thoughts, emotions, and behaviors. Various emotional states are impacted by the way we use our submodalities. Like, for example, let's take a look at love. Love for most of us is a wonderful, ethereal, almost mystical experience. It's also important from a modeling point of view to note that love is a state, and like all states, all results, it's produced by specific sets of actions or stimuli when they're perceived and represented in certain ways. How do you fall in love? Well, one of the most important perceptual ingredients of falling into love is associating with all the things you love about someone and disassociating from the things you don't love. Falling in love is such a heady, disorienting feeling for so many people because it's not a balanced one. You're not making a balance sheet of a person's good and bad qualities and running it through a computer and seeing what comes out. You're totally associating to a few elements of another person that you find intoxicating. You're never even aware, at least in that moment, of the person's faults. So what ruins relationships? Well, there are, of course, many factors. One may be that you no longer associate with the things that attracted you to that person in the first place. In fact, you may have gone so far as to associate with all the unpleasant experiences you've had with them and disassociate from the pleasant ones you've shared. How does this happen? A person may have noticed and made big pictures of his mate's habit of leaving the cap off the toothpaste or strewing her stuff on the floor. Maybe he no longer writes her love notes and she associates to that fact. Or possibly she remembers what he said to her in the heat of an argument, and she listens to that dialogue play over and over in her head, re-experiencing how she felt. She doesn't remember the gentle way he touched her that day, or the special things that he said the previous week, or what he did for her on their anniversary. The examples can go on and on. Bear in mind, there's nothing wrong with doing this. Just be clear that this pattern of representation will probably not empower your relationship. What if in the middle of an argument, you remember the first time you kissed or held hands? A time when your lover did something really special for you, and then you made that picture big and close and bright again. From that state, how will you treat this person that you love? So the point here is it's critical that we look at our patterns of communication and ask ourselves regularly, if I continue to represent things to myself this way, what will likely be the final result in my life? What direction is my present behavior taking me? And is that really where I want to go? Right now is the time to examine what your mental and physical actions are creating for you. You don't want to find out later that something you could simply and easily have changed led you down a path to a place you didn't want to be. In addition, it might be really valuable for you to note if you have a particular pattern of using association and disassociation. There are many people who spend most of their time disassociated from most of their representations. They seldom seem to be emotionally moved by anything. Disassociation has its advantages. I mean, if you keep out of deep emotions about some things, you have more resources in handling them. However, if this is your consistent pattern for representing most of your experiences in your life, then you're really missing what I like to call the juice of life, you know, a tremendous amount of joy. I've counseled conservative people who were limited in expressing what they felt about their lives, and I've helped them to set up new perceptual patterns. By greatly increasing their associated internal representations, they've come alive and found life to be a whole new experience. On the other hand, if all or the vast majority of your representations are fully associated, you might find yourself to be an emotional misfit. If you develop this strategy, you might find great difficulty in coping with life because you feel every little thing, and life isn't always fun or easy or exciting. A person who is fully associated with everything in life is extremely vulnerable and will usually take things too personally. The key to life is a balance in all things, including the perceptual filters of association and disassociation. We can associate and disassociate from anything we want. The key is to associate consciously, so it helps us. We can control any representation we make in our brain. Remember, when you change the way you represent something to yourself, you instantly change the choices available in your mind and in your body. Think of the power that you have from this day forward by knowing that you are not at the effect of anything. You can change how you feel and how you behave about anything by changing either what you're representing, what it means, or how you're representing it to yourself, or how you're using your body. Because your body, of course, is the filter that will tell you how to feel. See, if you try and look at the advantage of something and see it as a benefit in another situation, but you're sitting with your shoulders collapsed, your head down, you're breathing shallow, it's highly unlikely that you're going to feel congruent or certain that there really is a benefit in the situation. But if you will command both the use of your body so that you move it and use it in positive ways, while you change the meaning and what you represent, you can change any aspect of your life. If W. Mitchell can change what life means to him, then you can change what it means to you. And to be an effective business person, you've got to be a master reframer. To be an effective leader, of course you must be a master reframer. There's a famous story about Tom Watson, the founder of IBM. One of his subordinates had made a horrendous mistake that cost the company $10 million. And he was called into Watson's office and he said, "I suppose you want my resignation." Watson looked at him and said, "Are you kidding? We just spent $10 million educating you." There's a valuable lesson in everything that happens in life. The best leaders are the ones who learn the lesson and put the most empowering frame on outside events. This works for politics, business, teaching, and your home life as well. Be a leader by directing your mind now. One final thing about controlling our states. Physiology is our fastest way of changing our states. It is even more powerful and quicker than changing what or how we represent things. This is why it's so powerful to take care of your body, to get on a good exercise regimen that does not stress you but empowers you physiologically. When we feel good physically, it affects the way we perceive the world. The same challenges don't seem to be so tough anymore because the vehicle we need to make it through life with is taken care of and feels strong. Even though I've spent more time in this tape talking about how to change our representations, that's only because the descriptions of those takes longer. What's equally important, if not more important, is how you use your body. Diet is critically important. If you're ingesting foods that cause your body to work overtime and drain your nervous system of energy, then you're robbing yourself of a great deal of the resources that could change the quality of your life. If you're taking in high levels of sugar or if you're smoking, then you're robbing your body of oxygen and you're changing your biochemistry in ways that are definitely going to alter your moods. After all, that's the only reason people use drugs, is to alter their states. So why use food as a drug when you can do it directly without having the side effect of excess pounds or a hangover the next morning? In addition, the critical key is to make sure your body and mind are working together and not fighting each other. If in your mind you're representing you can do something, but your body doesn't match that, then you're incongruent and that'll cost you. So it's critical to notice the difference between being congruent about something and being incongruent. I'm sure there have been times when you've talked to someone and you left the meeting and they said they'd do something, but you didn't believe that they would. And the reason was because your unconscious mind probably noticed some incongruency. It probably noticed that the person was shaking their head no while they said, "Sure, we'll get it done." This happens more often than you can realize. Or someone says, "I really love you," while they shake their head no. That's called incongruence. The body is saying one thing and the mouth is saying another. Power comes when you align your body and mind in the same direction. So make sure while you're reframing your thoughts, you also reframe your body and make sure that you're moving with the quality you desire to change. And once again, remember, you can change how you feel by changing the way you walk and move, and that'll help you to change the way you represent things quicker and easier than if you just try and change the picture. Posture and breathing pattern are number one for changing state. Changing what you perceive and how you perceive it are number two. And there are many models available to you. If you want to have some fun sometime, get a videotape of somebody like Bruce Springsteen and start modeling or mirroring the way he uses his body. Use the same kind of gestures, use the same kind of tone of voice, the same kind of facial expression. I think you'll discover something really exciting. Get a tape of Martin Luther King and try and speak with the same tonality. When you do this, you'll begin to send the exact same messages to your brain as they send to theirs through their own physiology. It's quite a profound and enjoyable experience, and it'll give you new choices of how to use your body to produce peak experiences in your life. And finally, take care of your physical health. That includes exercise and that includes diet. So now you have the fundamental tools to run your brain, to direct your internal computer to produce any result you want. You can now choose ecstasy, love, desire, confidence, or any other emotion you want any moment in time. The power and the tools are at your fingertips. The buttons are your physiology and the way you represent things to yourself. So once you know how to do things, the question is, will you use these tools? And what will cause you to use them is if you have a compelling enough future. So let's take a look at how to create a future that's real.